own it. No excuses, no rationalizations, no yeah buts, just own it.
Hi, I'm Carl Vaders, and welcome to the Church Lobby, Conversations on Faith and Ministry. My guest for this episode is Kurt W. Bubna, and we're talking about some of the recent sad news about Philip Yancey, what happens when trust has been shattered, and how to walk with integrity again. This is a subject that is sadly so relevant for far more situations than just the ones we're aware of, like with Yancey, including Bubna's own story of how he, as he puts it, set my house on fire, not literally, but figuratively. I burned most everything in my world to the ground. This interview will not be filled with assumptions, criticism, or second-guessing about Philip Yancey or anyone else. Instead, it's a chance to talk with someone who has been in a very similar situation, and it will speak especially to anyone in leadership who is either right now in hidden sin or whose sin has recently been exposed. We want to walk you through the question, what do I do now? And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with my take as someone who has been on the other side, not as someone who has betrayed others or has been betrayed myself, but as someone who has walked with so many people, both in and outside of ministry, through the hard seasons of repentance, repair, and the long-term losses that result from sinful behavior. Well, Kurt Bubna, welcome to the Church Lobby. It's good to have you here today.
It's an honor to be with you, Carl. Thanks for having me.
Well, you and I are doing this interview today for some difficult reasons. Mm-hmm. But because I thought you responded to a very difficult situation in such a healthy, grace-filled way, I wanted to have a conversation with you about it. So what happened was, as almost all of our listeners probably know, in early January, the horrible news broke about Philip Yancey having had an adulterous relationship for several years. And as we tend to do in those situations, everybody had something to say about it, whether they knew anything more than anybody else did or not. Everybody seems to have a need to throw their opinion out there. I typically don't, and I didn't. And even this interview of having a conversation about somebody else's situation is very, very rare for me. But I read what you titled an open letter to Philip Yancey regarding his extramarital affair. And I thought your approach to it was so healthy that I thought I want to have a conversation with him about this, because not only did you address it well, but I also then went to your website and found a really wonderful article that relates to the same idea, how to rebuild trust after you've broken it. And in it, you just give a little tip of the hat to your story that, to put it bluntly, Philip Yancey's current situation is not foreign to you. So as much as you are comfortable with, could you give us a bit of a background that brings you to the place where you were able to write these articles and write an open letter to Philip Yancey and have some real empathy with his situation and bring our listeners up to speed with who you are and where you come from?
Thank you. I'd be glad to. I know that it's far too common. And I was always one of those guys, I pastored for over 40 years, that swore I'd never be that guy who would, you know, fall and end up in immorality and an adulterous affair. And I did. Not while I was in ministry, but I retired because I was headed that direction. I knew it was coming and retired from ministry. I actually got out of it because I didn't want to destroy the church. As it turned out, even though it was months later, it still pretty much wreaked havoc on the church that I pastored and started for over 20 years. So yeah, I am that guy, whether it's Carl Lentz or Bill Hybels or Philip Yancey. I have failed. I am a broken leader. I committed adultery, broke my wife's heart and my children's heart, and disappointed an awful lot of people, and went through my own season of just devastation, self-hate, at times suicidal thoughts, just really not wanting to be around anyone at all. And thank God I went through some amazing therapy with 82-year-old Christian therapist who was a godsend to me. So when I read about Philip, and I, like you, Carl, I typically don't want to jump on the bandwagon and add my voice to the volume of others that are spouting off all their opinions. But I, Philip Yancey's been always been a hero to me. And it's like, okay, he'll never read my letter. I seriously doubt he ever will. But I really wrote it because it was my heart toward him, and I was hoping other people would have the same compassionate heart toward a man who served the kingdom for a long time but failed.
I'm sitting in my studio slash library slash storage room here in my house right now, and I can literally reach out my hand right now and touch up to 11 Philip Yancey books on my shelf.
I've read them all too.
Yeah, he's had that kind of impact on me, on you, and on so many of us. And anytime this happens, whether the person is well known or not, obviously is a tragedy and brings so much damage in its wake. And I, first of all, I say I want to thank you for your honesty and your vulnerability to tell us your story. I don't want to spend time talking about your story, his story. That's not the role that I want to fulfill today.
Good.
But your and his story, that it happened once is too often, but it's more common. And now I've been in ministry for over 40 years, and there was a season back in the 80s when a couple of famous names, Jim Baker and Jimmy Swaggart, came forward. But I don't know of another time since then until now, until the last 3 or 4 years, when there has been such a wave of this happening with well-known names. And in the work that I do with pastors behind the scenes, also with those whose names are not well known, that right now the church is dealing with these things in a way that is one, important, two, heartbreaking, but three, there is grace, there are answers, and there is a way forward. And I want to spend most of our time today talking about some of that because you write from your firsthand experience very, very well about that. First of all, let's take a moment to talk to why did you feel the need to write, as you titled it, an open letter to Philip Yancey about this and just put it out there on Facebook? Why, as you say, that's not something you typically do. So what was it about that letter? And walk us through even some of what you hope that letter would do for those who read it. Because obviously it's an open letter, so it's not just for him, but walk through some of even the details of it. For instance, you talk about, different people are going to respond in different ways. And the posture of your heart matters. Don't read every email, you said. Give yourself space to heal. How important is that in these situations?
And I don't know Philip Yancey personally, so I made some assumptions, but I have
Sure.
walked through this with enough leaders and too many times, and in my own life. Our biggest battle is shame. And we know what we did. No one knows it better except Jesus, what we did, where we failed. Sometimes we don't know how we got there. But I'm not, I love the church, Carl. I love the church. I've been in church since I was a week old. I was a PK. I love the church. But it breaks my heart how easy it seems for too many in the church, and I know it's a broad generalization, but for too many in the church to pick up stones, to cast aside, to immediately reject everything. I mean, Philip Yancey is an incredible theologian, an incredible author. His book, What's So Amazing About Grace, was probably one of the most profound books I ever read. Irony, it's about grace. But for us to just sit, pull all his books off the shelf, to burn them. I personally had people that were horrific, toward, just horrible. They treated me in ways that, no Christ follower should ever treat another Christ follower. And no matter what someone's done, if they're, especially when they're repentant and they've confessed and they've owned it and they've gone public about it, why are we so harsh? Why are we so? I expected, and boy, did I get some very ugly pushback on that open letter, because we're just too quick to throw, and to use the cliche, to throw somebody under the religious bus. And I expected that would be happening for him. And I was hoping that maybe I could have a little bit, just a little bit of an impact on some Christians to say, you know what, let's not be so quick to go there.
So the pushback you got from the letter, was it mostly against the fact that you were being grace-filled toward him, or because of your own story, or?
A little bit of both, to be honest with you. Most of
Okay.
it was, our favorite word, and I wrote about this too, but our favorite word when someone fails is we love to talk about consequences. Consequences, and there's grace, but, and I can't tell you hundreds of times I heard, yeah, I forgive you, but, yeah, there's grace, but. And in my mind, yeah, there are natural consequences, there are consequences, but What I think we tend to forget too quickly is grace and mercy. And mercy is when we don't get what we do deserve. And grace is when we do get what we don't deserve. So I just was hoping the church would be a bit more merciful toward Philip than I saw them toward guys like Carl Lentz and Bill Hybels and Bruxy Cabby. I mean, the list goes on. And that was my hope.
So let me respond to that then, because help us to navigate that, I guess. Because my guess is that the people who were too harsh, if I were to talk to them, they would not believe they were too harsh.
No.
So what do we do if we're in a situation that we're facing a crisis like this? We're confronted with someone who has had an egregious sin that has hurt people. And we want to be sure, we want to offer a Christ-like response without feeling like we're somehow just giving them a free pass here.
Yeah,
Because,
condoning.
yes, how do we find a biblical, I don't even want to use the word balance here, because there's no balance to grace. Grace is completely unbalanced. So I don't have the word for it, but I think you know the question I'm going for. So I'll just let it go at this point, let you answer the question I can't figure out how to ask.
I think the biggest fear that most of those who gave me a lot of pushback or quite some of them mean in their response to me is that somehow when we turn a blind eye to this or sweep it under the rug, and it has been done too often with too many leaders. I don't know if you're aware of, but I'm not a Bethel guy, but I've read recently how Bethel had an issue and a guy for years, I guess, was failing, and they finally just came public and they admitted that they should have come public much sooner. So the fear is that I think the fear we deal with is, boy, if we don't discipline this, if we don't deal with this, then we're condoning it. It's going to happen again. And we land on truth. And I get it. Grace and truth. Yes, absolutely. Grace and truth. But it's not an either-or scenario. It's a both-and. And I don't know as humans, and I'll be honest, and I take this to heart personally, I don't know if we're ever going to get it completely figured out. You know, if we grew up in a home where truth was the big deal, then grace is an offense to us. If we grew up in a home where grace was the big deal, then truth is an offense to us. And we're processing. I'm constantly in this tension, and I think it's okay to be in that point of tension where I want truth, but I also know that, my goodness, you know, we cannot in the world. This is the thing that breaks my heart, and if I start crying, it's because it just kills me. The world is watching the way we treat each other. And if we can't love and walk people through restoration, especially, and I know, yes, there are a lot of people who haven't owned it. They don't confess it. They're excusing it. I didn't do that. I'm not asking anybody to go that route. But when someone like Philip Yancey says, I did this, I failed, I sinned, and he goes public with that, we ought to be wrapping our arms around that guy and says, how can we walk you through this season of restoration? And believing that God's specialty is renewal, restoration, redemption, always. We believe that theologically, Carl, but we are really bad at putting that into practice. And I say we, including me.
So how do you answer the person who would respond to that and go, okay, but if I wrap my arms around the perpetrator, what does that say to the victim?
Great question. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, no one feels the pain, probably no one feels the pain of the victim than the one who is the victimizer. If he's godly, if he's confessed, if he's owned it, if he's brought himself before Jesus and said, oh God, forgive me, help me, then he feels. Philip Yancey knows what he did to his wife. I know what I did to my wife. And I ache. I still ache. I don't walk under shame and guilt, but I still ache every time I think about what I did to my ex, what I did to my previous wife. And so we've got to get to the point where we actually love believes all things, hopes all things, is patient, is tenderhearted, and we restore gently those who have fallen. And the way that looks in my mind is we can't be focusing on discipline and punishment and shame and get there. It's not consistent with the heart of Jesus.
Yeah, the dividing line that I'm hearing in you, and correct me if I'm wrong, is I think a lot of people deal with those who have confessed, who have been honest about it, who have repented, who are desiring to make amends in any way that they can. We often treat those people the same way as those who are hiding, lying, continuing to obfuscate, and trying to get away with something. And there is a difference. God treats the repentant sinner different than the ongoing sinner. And yet,
Yep.
somehow, once we discover it, there's this thing where we want to treat both the same. Maybe in recent years, especially, we're too afraid of appearing to not hold people accountable, because there have been times when we've obviously heard the stories where someone, because they're in a position of power, who failed, it was just all kinds of covering up and sweeping it under the rug. And we're so afraid of doing that that maybe we've swung the pendulum too far to the other direction.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's the case. I know there's the risk. And I used the word earlier, tension. If we don't have tension in this issue, then we're probably, there's something wrong with us. There's something wrong with me. I need to feel the tension of grace and truth. I need to feel that, man, this guy. But if someone, and here's the huge caveat, if someone has owned it, in that article that you referred to that I talked about, how to rebuild trust, the very first thing I say is, own it. Own it. No excuses, no rationalizations, no yeah buts, just own it. And there are things at times that I even own things I didn't do because I wanted to basically say, whatever you want to accuse me of, yes, okay, guilty, forgive me. But we've got to come to the point where we understand that this is important. And yes, there are people who abuse grace, people who abuse power, people who have not. Or they get there, years and years ago. My dad was a pastor in Hibbing, Minnesota. Tell you a quick story. A kid, Kenny, was a friend of mine. Kenny was a juvenile delinquent, always got in trouble. And I will never forget the time we went to visit Kenny in prison, my dad and I, and Kenny was wailing and crying and going on and on and on. And then he got out and he did it again. And my dad said something to me I never forgot. He said, Kenny was sorry for getting caught, not sorry for his sin. And I think that's some of the fear we have. Well, they got caught. And that's why they're, but man, if someone is truly owned it, we have no other biblical, godly, Christ-like response than to say, how can I walk with you now through the healing?
I think that's the huge difference there, is if the cross is about anything, it tells us that everything is forgivable. Repentance is required for us to make that amends, and there will be recompense, and there's often consequences to pay, and sometimes outright penalties to pay that have to be done. But that does not remove or lessen the reality that the cross tells me there's nothing that's not forgivable. And that grace seems so, I'm going to use the word again, it's really it's not fair, because there's nothing fair about it. And again, we've already talked about the irony of, the person who inspired this conversation to begin with wrote this book, What's So Amazing About Grace, in which he walks through so much of that and helped me in my understanding of it. But yeah, grace and truth, that combination of the two. And I like that you said we need to live in the tension, and there should be some discomfort in that. And I think maybe that put the finger on part of what often troubles me about this. Anybody who is too quick to condemn or too quick to try to just get somebody replatformed, for instance, that bothers me. I want to see a struggle in the person who's responding, that this grace and truth thing is not easy, and I'm going to walk through it, and I'm going to embrace the tension, and I'm not going to offer too easy answers on either side of that.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to be willing to walk through. I mean, I had to come to the point where I wanted the vending machine forgiveness. I want to just, plug in the I'm sorry and forgive me and let's move on. At first, that's kind of what I was looking for. And one day, I'll never forget, I was just in a time of just crying, literally wailing. And God, just take me home. I don't want to, I can't deal with this anymore. And the Holy Spirit just whispered to my heart, you haven't dealt with it. And it's like, oh, I mean, I really came to the point where I had to admit, no, I 1000% have to own this, accept this, take responsibility for it. And that may mean lifetime of consequences. Now, I pray for mercy every day, and I've experienced a lot of God's mercy, but I've experienced a lot of consequences as a result of my sin as well. But from the angle of us looking at other people, name the person, Philip Yancey, whomever, there's dozens of them, unfortunately. Now, I think we tend to jump too quickly to one extreme or the other. And that's why I keep coming back to that. I need to have that tension. Like, man, I know this isn't easy, and I know that's not what the way it should be. But Jesus, on the cross, he forgave the thief next to him who didn't ever do anything right. Ever do anything right. And yet at that moment, Jesus said, man, today you'll be with me in paradise.
Yeah,
That's grace.
absolutely. Yeah, it really is extraordinary. And now a short break to talk about something else. If you like the content you're hearing, here are two things you can do for us. First, forward this podcast to a friend. Second, consider becoming a financial supporter through Patreon, Venmo, or PayPal. Just go to karlvaters.com/support. For as little as $3 a month, you can help us put these resources into the hands of the ministries that need them the most. Our support link is in the show notes. I want to spend the last few minutes that we have together talking about the article that you did write, How to Rebuild Trust After You've Broken It. And I want to do this because there's no question there are people in ministry who are listening to this right now who have broken trust. It may not even be publicly exposed yet. Nobody but them may know about it. And others that it is publicly known and they have broken trust and they are trying to work through all of this. So I want to walk through this because I believe what you've written out here from your own experience is so helpful. So if you are in that situation and you have broken trust and you're trying to figure out, one, even how do I maybe even confess it that you haven't confessed it yet, or it's been confessed and now you're trying to walk through it. I'm going to go through each of these. I think there are 7 points in this. Yeah. I want to throw each one out to you and just have you walk us through a short little bit about it. We will put, of course, this article and the Facebook post in the show notes for everybody who wants to read the entirety of it at your own leisure when you want to. First thing you say, number one, is this: own it fully without conditions or deflection.
Yeah, no excuses. We want to give Adam and Eve, goes back to the beginning, give some rationalization to what we've done. We've got to just simply say, I failed, I messed up, I sinned, period.
Yeah, and you even quote your first book, Epic Grace, where you said, you wrote, God doesn't blush at our sin, but he won't fix what we refuse to reveal.
Yeah.
You can't heal what you hide. I think that's in any recovery ministry or even non-ministry program that I've ever been into, that here's where I am. It's like I constantly come back to the first law of the leadership is to define reality.
Mm-hmm.
What is your, you've got to be honest about your current reality. You can't move forward without it.
That's good. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was these number two, apologize like someone who's been wrecked by what they've done.
Yeah. Another way I guess I would put that is apologize with depth. You got to bleed. Jesus bled for us. So I know the theology. But I'm saying is if they don't see the devastation that it brought to you and the realization of the devastation you brought to others, then apologies are weak. They don't have any weight. So apologize with depth.
Yeah, not crocodile tears, just the actual, you've got to know, other people have to see the depth of how it's hitting you. I see that because I've walked with so many people through that. And there are times when you want to lean forward and you want to walk with them through it because you're seeing the pain. And then you see others who feel like somehow they need to hide it. And even if they're hiding it because that's been their family background, that we don't express these emotions, it still feels deflective, even if it's not intentionally deflective.
True. Very true. Yep.
Yeah. Number three, kill the behavior that caused the damage.
There is a why behind everything. And I think if we don't take that, my therapist, godly Christian woman, she forced me, and not this navel-gazing retrospective, you know, childhood trauma, all that. I'm just saying, you've got to understand, why did you do what you did? And what needs to stop so it doesn't continue?
Yeah, absolutely. Number four, stop rushing their healing.
Oh, man, this was the most challenging part for me because I've always been a grace guy. I mean, from Brendan Manning to Philip Yancey, I mean, that's what you cut me, that's what I bleed. And so my attitude was, hey, you know, a lot of men in their relationship with their wives, hey, I apologize, let's just move on. And I needed to stop expecting people to just jump on the Kurt Bubna, you know, forgiveness wagon and to understand that it's going to take time. And it takes time for me to get healed. It's going to take time for them to respond to that healing.
Yeah, this was the one of the seven that jumped out for me because it was one that I don't often see considered in these kinds of how do you make things right lists. Don't rush the person who's been hurt, whether it's the person who directly was sinned against or those who are within the orbit who are simply hurt because they have a relationship with you or whatever that might be. Everybody's going to go at their own pace, and trying to rush them like, why aren't you over it yet, is not a healthy thing for anybody. I'm glad you included that because it's often not mentioned in that. So thank you for that. So number four was stop rushing their healing. Number five then is live in the light.
It's a theological term we all understand, but I mean, I had to make some decisions moving forward into my next marriage because I did get remarried to really promise my wife now that there would be no secrets. Exposure to my phone, to my text messages, that I wouldn't hide anything from her and that I would always tell the truth. And I have 3 years of marriage, that's been the pattern. So if you don't, then you're just going to slip back into the darkness again.
Yeah, this is something I think for every marriage from the very beginning that ought to be so helpful to us. Something that Shelley and I have done for our entire marriage. She and I each have access to everything that each of us has. There's nothing on my phone she can't find, nothing on my computer, nothing on hers that I can't find, nothing in any bank account. Because anything that is hidden, it does make it hard when you're trying to surprise them for anniversaries. I've been tempted to start my own Amazon account just so I can buy her stuff that she'll be surprised by. But I don't even want to do that because the surprise isn't worth the potential of keeping anything hidden. It really doesn't. The danger in that is far exceeds any potential benefit from it.
And again, if we're going to rebuild trust, that's what that whole article is about. You can't
Yeah.
rebuild trust unless you're willing to be open.
Yeah. Especially after trust has been broken, it's so much more
Especially.
important. Yeah, number six, let grace do what only grace can.
What I meant essentially in that was I struggled. We tend to struggle. Again, grace is a theoretical or theological understanding, but to actually begin to practice that, to live that out so that I didn't live under a cloud of shame and guilt anymore. And especially shame, where you begin to say, I am rather than I did. I used to think it was just this concept or this theological position. And when you walk through something like this, man, it's a lifeline. It's everything.
Yeah.
Without grace, I literally would have taken my own life.
Yeah, that is so important that the idea of not taking your sin on as your identity, and especially when a sin has been significant and large and deep, and that's got to be really hard not to own that as a part of who you are, and separating what you've done from who you are is such an important part. And then to number seven, even if the relationship doesn't survive, you still can.
Yeah, I will tell you, and I'm heartbroken to even say this, that I still have relationships that are, once upon a time, they were incredibly precious to me. And
That's
they
okay.
canceled me. It kills me because one of them's one of my children. And I love her with all my heart. I want to be in a relationship with her. And it's painful, so painful. But I've got to keep moving forward. If I can't let that derail me and defeat me. And so I got to stay the course and hope, pray every single day. I pray for her that there will be restoration. And I believe there will be someday. But in the meantime, I not with a coldness, not with a nonchalantness, but with just commitment, I am going to keep moving forward with a limp, absolutely, but I'm going to keep moving forward.
Yeah. And as you describe it under that point, the moving forward, as you delineated, is you can still become a person of integrity. So when you talk about moving forward, it's not like moving away and just waving your hand. It's I'm going to be a person of character moving forward, whether the people I love are able to go on that journey with me or not.
Yes, well put.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say a huge thank you to you for all of this. These are never easy conversations to have. But there are no question, there are people who are listening to this who are in a state where they've broken trust, where they've damaged relationships. They're trying to figure out the way to get back. And if any of what you've written about because of your experience can bring healing to others, that I think is one of those ways forward. I've caused damage here, but maybe I can help others to lessen their damage going forward. What would you say maybe to the person who's listening who has found themselves in a place where there is significant sin in their life that is going to have to be confessed, but nobody knows yet.
Oh boy, the weight you're carrying, the anxiety you have, the loss of sleep, the loss of peace, the pretending, living behind that mask is killing you. It's killing you. And you're afraid because you've seen the church treat people poorly and blow them up and nuke them and destroy them. And I get that fear. I understand the reality of that. But to live bound by sin at any level, it strangles you, it strangles us, it kills us. And you can live free. And as painful as it is, and it is, it's worth the pain.
Yeah, I've also noticed that in the situations I've counseled through, the very small percentage, unfortunately, of those who confessed before they were caught had a higher rate of healing than those who were caught first. So if anybody is out there and you have not been caught yet, confessing before being caught is always better than being caught.
I would absolutely agree with that. And that's my story. I'm grateful. I hesitate to say the one thing I did right, because how do you
Yeah, I
go
hear you.
there? But I did come clean before it was discovered. And Carl, that's wisdom.
Yeah, because then you can't even throw at them, well, they're just sad because they got caught. I didn't get caught, except by my own conscience. Yeah, and then it also has a better chance of rebuilding. There's so many better things that happen. And obviously, none of this is easy. The advice we're giving today, we're not doing lightly. We're doing with great sorrow, but also with a sense of real hopefulness because grace is real. And if grace doesn't apply here, then I don't know where it applies because that's what grace is supposed to be all about. It comes into those impossible situations. And I thank you again, Kurt, for sharing your story. Thank you for making it available to others so that their stories going forward can be ones of healing and of grace rather than continuing devastation, even as they have to walk through some significant consequences of what they've done. But thank you for sharing that with us. And I do want, before we go, I do have the four lightning round questions. It almost doesn't feel appropriate to be asking these, but I'm going to do this anyway, and we'll see where the lightning round questions go from here. First of all, what are the biggest changes you've seen in your field of ministry in the last few years, and how have you adapted to them?
I think people need to see vulnerable leaders, real, raw, vulnerable leaders who are honest about their struggles. And the more we do that, the better we're going to have their respect and their trust.
Yeah, I'm seeing that as a person who's been in pastoral ministry for over 40 years. It used to be taught to leaders as a sign of leadership that you kind of held yourself above. And that is now being seen as the toxic thing that it is in far more quarters. And living vulnerably, honestly, with and among people is becoming more and more common. And I think that's a really healthy thing too. So yeah, I identify with that. Secondly, what free resource like an app or a website has helped you lately that you would recommend, especially for those who are in small church ministry?
Wow, that's a great question. I love the YouVersion Bible app. I can read umpteen different translations. I've got devotions. I track new devotion every day. And it's a simple app. I know there's like a billion people have downloaded it, but it really is as a tool for me, something that I have right there on my phone and love using it. And it's a gift.
Yeah, it really is. The portability of these resources right now and the low to virtual to no cost of them is extraordinary.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
was in the doctor's office yesterday and I was on YouVersion.
There we go. Third one, what's the best piece of ministry advice you've ever received?
Probably be careful how you define success. Years ago, my mentor, who I went to be with Jesus about 10 years ago, he said, Kurt, and I at that time was pastoring a large church quite successfully. He said, how do you define success, Kurt? And I immediately went to, well, mega church, 10,000 people, blah, 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 which I wasn't at there yet. And then I realized, no, success has changed lives. And one, how do you measure one changed life, the value of one changed life? Be careful how you define success.
Yeah, that's huge. And that's, of course, a big part of what this ministry is all about, especially. So, and then the final one, what's the funniest or weirdest thing you've ever seen in church?
Oh man, I had a guy come up to me probably 10 years ago now, and he asked me, I had done a message since we've been on the topic of grace, do I ever teach about anything but grace? And I said, well, sure I do. Why? And he said, because every time I come here, it's always about grace, 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 grace. And I said, well, how often do you come? He said, well, I'm a faithful attender. I said, well, just out of curiosity, what is that? And he said, I'm here every Christmas and every Easter. And so I said, well, yeah, definitely those are going to be grace messages. And he was probably 6'5", 300 pounds, and he scared me a little bit. But I'll never forget it because, like, really? Yeah, so that's one of those moments that I walked away actually laughing.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Absolutely. Hey, if anybody wants to follow up with you online through your ministry, get any help in any way or further advice, how can they get a hold of you?
I'm on LinkedIn. My name, Kurt Bubna, is pretty rare. So, I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. Those are probably the two best platforms to look me up. And I post there 4 or 5 times a week, different articles, almost devotionals on a regular basis.
Okay, so you're the guy on LinkedIn.
The one guy, that's me. I'm the one Kurt Bubna.
Okay, I'm on there as well. So thank you for that, Kurt. Again, for your vulnerability, for your time today. We will put links to all of that in the show notes, including how to get a hold of Kurt, including your Amazon author page. You've written several books. So if anybody wants to do that, but the main thing I really want to encourage you, if you're listening today, especially if you're in this situation, take Kurt's advice to heart and take his story to heart. That there, while there are consequences, there is grace and there is a way forward, and God will show that to you if you are honest and vulnerable and repentant towards Him. And if you do the steps that the scripture lays out for us, as Kurt has again walked us through today, there is hope, there is grace, and there is healing. Kurt, thank you again so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
You bet, Carl. Thank you.
I have such appreciation for Kurt's vulnerability in this conversation. It wasn't easy to do either for him or for me, because you don't want to fall into the ditches that we talked about are on either side of the road, either offering excuses on one side or piling on the other side. So, as someone myself who has walked with victims and perpetrators, I want to revisit what we talked about in the conversation. It is important to shine a light on everything. I am not promising that this will be easy. It will not. But there is no way forward except through the journey of honesty, repentance, and forgiveness. If this is you, don't go through it alone. Find help now. Reach out to someone you trust. And if it's a severe case, find a Christian with professional training who can help you navigate this. Then be patient. Don't think you can hurry to healing or hurry someone else's healing, but stay the course. Healing is not fast and it's not easy, but through the grace of Jesus, it is available. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders. And I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby.